listening to the Bronco Report Podcast, featuring the latest news and opinions on Boise State athletics. Brought to you by the Idaho Press Tribune. Keep it here at BlueTurfSports.com for up-to-the-minute coverage of the Boise State Broncos. Now, here's Boise State beat writer B.J. Raines for another edition of the Bronco Report.
Greetings, Boise State fans. Yes, welcome to another edition of the Bronco Legends podcast. My name is BJ Raines, Boise State beat writer for the Idaho Press Tribune, also online at BlueTurfSports.com. We've reached episode 3 of the Bronco Legends podcast, and I could not be more excited for this one. Kellen Moore is our guest, the former Boise State quarterback. Everybody knows the stats, the records by now. 50-3 record, the winningest quarterback in college football history. He's going into the Boise State Hall of Fame in a couple of weeks. A ton of things going on with Kellen Moore, not to mention he's now Coach Kellen Moore of the Dallas Cowboys, the quarterback's coach. We get into all that, the Hall of Fame, his time at Boise State, being a Heisman Trophy finalist, his playing career in the NFL, and transitioning into a coach now with the Dallas Cowboys. And yes, I do ask him, does he have dreams of ever being a Boise State coach, Kellen Moore? As always, please subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Google Play. You just search for the Bronco Legends podcast. You can also find the link to subscribe at BlueTurfSports.com. We would really appreciate it if you subscribe to the podcast. That way, each episode is automatically downloaded directly to your smartphone, your tablet. It's going to be easy for you to listen that way and don't have to search for the episode each week. If you don't subscribe, you can listen to previous episodes as well at BlueTurfSports.com. You just click on the podcast page. There are links to subscribe there on iTunes and Google Play, as well as listen right off the website to the old episodes as well. This is episode 3. Brian Harsin was episode 1. Chris Peterson was episode 2, and both of those episodes are available at BlueTurfSports.com. But really, really excited about episode 3. Kellen Moore, former Boise State quarterback. Let's not waste any more time. Here's my conversation with the former Boise State great. Well, Kellen, really appreciate you for doing this, man. Congratulations. I want to start with the Hall of Fame. Congratulations. That's just such a really cool honor, and it's got to be a pretty cool feeling for you.
Yeah. No, thanks for having me first and foremost. And yeah, obviously the Hall of Fame and Boise State, that's awesome. It's a cool deal. Obviously a special place, for us. And so truly neat to have an opportunity to do that. Go back to Boise for a few days.
What, you know, you think of your whole career and to get an honor like this, and, you know, only Nate Potter is the only other football player going in, and this is the first class they've had in, you know, almost a decade or more than a decade. For you to be one of the first ones to kind of fill this gap when they haven't had anybody go in since 2007, I think. What does that mean to you, to think of all the players, all the teams at Boise State, for you to be one of the first representatives from the football standpoint in more than a decade going into the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, no question. I mean, you know, just thinking of what's happened in the last decade, obviously a lot has happened, a lot has changed, and, you know, a lot of success within the football program there. And so, you know, I feel very fortunate that, you know, Nate and myself are kind of the two going in there first. I'm sure we'll be the first of many over the course of the next few years. A lot of people deserving and people that really, you know, did some great things for Boise State and really helped that program and, you know, achieve a lot of things.
You'll be coming back, I assume, your family. Who all do you think? I know it's still a little bit of ways, but who all do you think is coming back? And just to be back and have some of your friends or former coaches or teammates or whoever back with you, it's going to have to be a pretty cool feeling.
Yeah, no question. This is, you know, spring game weekend, so certainly a lot of people end up coming back for that game. It'll be awesome. Like, for us, you know, bring our family back, bring the little ones, let them run around the blue and see Boise for a little bit. Obviously, you know, it's a place that we love, and so anytime we get the chance to go back, we're all about it.
Well, let's go back to, you know, the beginning of your Boise State career first, if you don't mind, and kind of go down memory lane a little bit. And how do you remember kind of just the whole recruitment process and ending up at Boise State?
Yeah, recruiting. It's an interesting part. Some people love it, some people maybe not so much. I was probably on the latter. You know, maybe it was my situation, obviously. You know, it was what it was. But I remember, yeah, you kind of got a lot of no's or, you know, whatever you may say. But I remember going to Boise in June, going into my senior year. We went to the football camp. A bunch of quarterbacks were there. And I remember that was kind of the time where it finally clicked that this place is awesome, first and foremost. I love the people. And I thought maybe there's a chance, you know, he had a chance to throw, you know, Harsh was there, Pete was there, the whole crew, And, you know, it was kind of that first moment of everything kind of clicking. They're like, well, this, you know, and this was, it was huge for me. I grew up in a little town, you know, 5,000 people, 6,000 people, whatever it is in Prosser. And so, you know, you walk into Broncos Stadium, you're kind of thinking, you know, this is cool. This is big time football right here. And, you know, they end up offering me a few weeks later. And, you know, back then I verbally committed in September, which is, probably considered a late bloomer nowadays in this crazy recruiting world. But, you know, that's how it went down.
Now, I correct, you know, what other offers did you have? What other interest, did you have?
Yeah, I love, I always give harsh, crap about this because, I had an offer from Eastern Washington, which I probably had that since I was, you know, when I was like a junior or something.
Just, sure.
I knew those people so well. We always, our high school team always went to football camp there. Paul Wolf was there. You know, that was kind of like, you know, college. You just, I was around it so much. I knew all those guys through my dad being a coach and all that. And, Boise offered tail end of June, maybe in the beginning of July. I can't remember the exact date. Kind of sat on that thinking like, you know, I'm probably going to go that way. I hadn't committed. I still remember beginning of September trying to call Coach Harsin's phone because I reached the point where, okay, I think I'm going to commit. And it was like the beginning of the week, so they're game planning. And I couldn't get a hold of them. I kept calling a couple times. Long story short, I got to probably Tuesday or Wednesday, and I missed him again. And then I got a random call. I answered, and it's Dennis Erickson from University of Idaho. And they ended up offering me. And, you know, Coach Erickson at the time being at Idaho, it was intriguing just because of all the success he had. It's still close to home. And it was funny because about an hour later, Harsh finally called me back. And I kind of had to dumb it down and just kind of say, you know, I'm just calling just to check in, see how things are going. You know, at the time, you know, calls me a few hours before that. I was probably trying to commit. So I had to go to Idaho that week. I went and visited them in Eastern Washington. My dad and I actually went to a game of each. And then I believe it was the next week, Boise State, it was Hawaii at Boise State in 2006. And, I committed that trip. So we went to the game that right before the game I committed. Coach Pete has a way of his words and his influence and persuasion. And you walk into his office and before you know it, you say, I'm committed.
There's probably no chance Coach Pete makes it back for the Hall of Fame for there for you, is there? Or do you know any chance if he might come back?
I do not know. I mean, they're probably in the thick of, you know, maybe they potentially could be in the thick of spring ball then
I
as well.
Take but, a private plane for a couple hours and come to the ceremony for you.
We can see if it could get pulled off. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure he's going to be going in at some point too, you know, very, very soon after. But, okay, so you come in and they win the Fiesta Bowl while you're committed, right?
Yes. So my senior year in high school is the Fiesta Bowl year with Zabransky, Ian, Benny, the whole crew. I actually went to the game. It's awesome. You know, it was the coolest thing ever, and got a chance to go to the game, watch it. My next door neighbor at the time was Dan Gore. He was actually on the team, so. So we kind of went with their family, and we all went and watched the game. And obviously, you know, doesn't get any better than that.
So how do you redshirt your first year, and then you win the job right away in 2008 as a freshman. What do you remember about just winning that job and then the start, you know, as a redshirt freshman right away?
Yeah, 2007 was Taylor. Taylor was starting, and, you know, it was Taylor or Bush. And so that was kind of the back-and-forth thing. I was just the kid at the bottom of the barrel, you know, trying to see what this thing was. So, you know, ended up going to Taylor. And so the next year it was Bush and myself. And obviously, those, you know, first and foremost, those two guys are awesome. Taylor's, you know, back at Boise now, helping out and doing awesome things. And he was awesome for me, and Bush was awesome. So in 2000, going in 2008, it was Bush, Nick Lomax, Mike Coughlin, and myself. So it was the four of us, and kind of reached the point towards the end of fall camp. It kind of, you know, went through spring ball, through fall camp, and then at the end of fall camp, you know, Harsh ended up bringing me in and telling me to be ready to go. So, you know, that was obviously a huge moment. You know, a big opportunity. probably was naive and didn't really understand the circumstances and what was going on. But, I think I was really fortunate because that room was so good. That's really important for quarterbacks. And Bush was awesome. He could have, being a senior, missing out on two opportunities, could have gone, could have gone south, could have, kind of created a division or whatever he may, could have happened. But Bush was really, really the guy for me and helped me through that. I was still learning at that time. And so, he's one of those guys I still look up to. I still appreciate all the things that he did for me because it was huge.
What do you remember about that first year, obviously going to play at Oregon? I think you guys might still be the last, non-conference, home loss or something that they've had over there. To go over there and beat them and then to have that season where you go undefeated but you don't get in the BCS or whatever and then obviously lose to TCU in the Poinsettia Bowl. What do you remember just about that freshman season?
Yeah, freshman year, I still learned so much. My first year was like you're redshirting, you didn't go on road trips, you kind of hung out at home games. You weren't, fully involved. And so you're still learning so much of the process. And so those guys like Bush were huge for me. I remember going to Oregon. That was, doesn't get better than that. Kind of grew up always liking Oregon. Kind of subtly rooting for them. They were kind of that cool, trendy team in the Northwest.
Sure.
I still laugh. I remember obviously they didn't recruit me. They didn't really, don't really dive in for 6-foot pocket passers. And so, I remember I found this article. Mike Blotti was the quarterback or the head coach at Oregon at the time, and he had this featured article about the quarterback position and what they're looking for. And I've gone through this recruiting process, a lot of Pac-12 obviously, didn't really recruit me all that much. And I found this article, and I got the physical attributes they look for in a quarterback, and I still have it to this day, and so I laugh at it because I had all these measurables. It was, 6'3 or taller, 215, let's say, he's got to bench press this, he's got to have this 40, he's got to do this. And it was like, I literally missed on every single list, every single thing on the list. And so, it was one of these things, I just kind of typed it up and I kept it with me. And, lo and behold, you go and play Oregon, a few weeks into your career. And, it was obviously an awesome experience. I was still young. I was still figuring things out, but we had a good crew, a deep crew. We had, Childs and Vinny and Ian and so many guys. And so, it was one of those games that a lot of guys made plays, a lot of different people. I threw a ball in a triple coverage, the second series of the game, and Childs goes up and catches it practically one-handed. That goes, turned that game pretty quickly. And then a bunch of other guys made some plays. And so, it was the start of a special season. We're fortunate. Undefeated regular season. Utah was the other undefeated team, so that year they went to the Sugar Bowl.
Yep.
And, they obviously had a tremendous season. They went and got after Alabama, so played TCU and didn't get that one done. Didn't play very well. But, kind of led into, some great seasons after that as well.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so 09, you go 14-0, obviously, the Fiesta Bowl over TCU. Just that season going undefeated, getting the chance, and what do you remember about having to play TCU again? And I know obviously there's some talk that, they shouldn't have had those two guys, play against each other. You have to play them in a bowl game the second straight year. You probably would have rather played, maybe a more named team at the time. What do you remember just about that season going undefeated and winning that game and having to make a comeback in that game too?
Yeah, great season. Started off with Oregon, beat them at home. Defense plays really well. Played pretty well throughout the season. Then having a chance to play in the Fiesta Bowl, play TCU. I mean, they beat us the year before, so certainly you were excited about the opportunity to play them again. That was the BCS, all that, crazy stuff that you have no control over. So it was what it was. That game we didn't particularly play great on offense. I remember we had this first play of the game. We had this thing dialed up for Titus Young to, basically have a touchdown on the first play. And I got too excited and threw it about 20 yards over his head. So I had a chance to throw a touchdown the first play, but screwed that one up. But, we were able to play pretty well. And defense played, obviously, you know, really, really well. Special teams, you know, played well, and, you know, it was a good game.
You mentioned Titus Young, and to have the receiving core you did during your time at Boise State, I mean, to have two NFL receivers, you know, in the next season in terms of Pettis and Young and everything, I'm just curious, what just to have the talent that you did around you during your career at Boise State, the chances you ended up getting at the pros and things like that may not have happened, and the success you guys may not have happened to BSU if you didn't have some of the talent you had around you.
Oh, no question. I mean, we were pretty loaded. You know, it's funny, especially, you know, just looking back on how many guys played in the NFL on defense and on offense, and guys that are still playing. You know, having Austin, having Titus, the receiver, the other guys like Tyler Shoemaker, and you know, we had a really deep crew. Obviously, running backs were awesome. You know, led by Doug, and so. You know, we had a lot of guys around us, a lot of success, and you know, I don't know how it happened, but we were loaded with talent, and somehow these recruiting classes, you know, in those few years right there, we just found guys that all were kind of had that chip. For whatever reason, they ended up at Boise, whether schools dropped them or they snuck into Boise, you know, no one recruited them, whatever may have happened. We all kind of ended up at Boise, and it turned out pretty well for us.
What, you know, just knowing Titus Young like you did, to see his situation now, and obviously he's you know, serving another prison sentence, what are just your thoughts on Titus, and what was he like? I know he got suspended for that year at Boise State, but for fans that maybe are just seeing it, reading the headlines in the paper and stuff, what was Titus Young like, you know, as a teammate, and just to have to see him dealing with what he's dealing with? How tough is that right now?
Yeah, I think it's sad. It's obviously brutal. You know, I was able to see him at Boise, you know, and through that process, and then I also went to Detroit when he was there, and so. You know, certainly Titus had his ups and downs and his struggles. You know, he got suspended for basically an entire year at Boise. And so, you know, to see how much he had changed and grown during that suspension, I think, you know, it really benefited him. I think he got a better perspective. He became a really, really good kid as far as, you know, caring about all the other things. You know, it wasn't just about football and taking care of the school and, you know, doing the right things and all that stuff. And so, you know, you felt like he was trending in the right direction. So, obviously, when I got to Detroit, he had an awesome rookie year. Everyone was a huge fan of his, thought, you know, this guy's going to be great. I mean, he had the best job in the NFL. He played opposite Calvin Johnson. I mean, he's going to play one. He's going to get one-on-one coverage the entire game. And, you know, he had this role that was really perfect for him there. And, you know, when I got there, I just felt like something seemed a little different, you know, kind of maybe teetering towards, you know, kind of a previous Titus. And so, you know, things obviously transpired there that things didn't go well. You know, to be honest, I had a few conversations with him. I just felt like he wasn't in the right place. And so to see what happened post-Detroit obviously is sad, just because you've seen a really good Titus. You've seen a version of him that can be the nicest kid in the world, can care about everyone, can do everything the right way. And so, you're hopeful that something positive comes out of this at the end of the day. But obviously, you know, right now it's you know, not looking great. And, you know, you can only hope for the best.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And certainly do hope he can just finally somehow get things turned around. Let's go back to 2010, okay? Your junior year, the Virginia Tech game. How much fun was that Virginia Tech game? And you know, you had Kirk Herbstreit and everybody there, and they're talking about this is kind of the game where you guys could kind of prove yourselves and maybe make a run, obviously, towards the BCS again. What do you remember about that Virginia Tech game and obviously having to make the late comeback there?
Yeah, big game. You know, first game of the year, kind of one of those, you know, nowadays there's so many of them, but it's kind of one of those made-for-TV type week one games, you know, and, you know, now there's a few more than just the one or two back then, but, you know, it was an awesome experience, big game, you know, Virginia Tech, who, you know, basically every year is a top 25, 10 win plus, you know, in it till the end type team, and so, you know, it was a huge game, huge opportunity for us just to kind of continue the trend of what had been going on the previous year or two. And, I remember we jumped out to an early lead. I think Pettis had a blocked punt. Defense played well. We got a couple touchdowns in there, and then they kind of came back, and luckily for us, we got the ball back with about 2 minutes left. Drove it down the field, got a few plays, scored a touchdown, and defense held them with about a minute left. So it was obviously a huge game, wild game. Such a neat experience. You walk out of the stadium and you're at the Redskins stadium, and you got the Enter Sandman going on with Virginia Tech, and it was a cool atmosphere.
Okay, so on the other side of the coin, how much does that Nevada loss still pain you, or do you still think about the Nevada loss from time to time?
Oh, certainly it's still a tough one, but it's been a little while, so I don't think you think about it daily. Obviously we missed on some opportunities, and everyone remembers the kick. It wasn't all about the kick, and plenty of other opportunities where you take care of this situation, you score one more, you score a touchdown in overtime. There's plenty of opportunities for us to finish that game off, and Nevada came roaring back, played really well. We missed a few opportunities, and that one obviously it was a tough one.
I mean, you only lost three games. I would assume that's the toughest one, because, I mean, you guys at worst probably were headed to the Rose Bowl, right?
Certainly, yeah. I don't remember exactly what that season – yeah, I guess I think it was the Rose Bowl TCU ended up going to. It was a tough one, no doubt about it. But,
Okay, I mean, your senior year, 2011, obviously the Georgia game, the Chick-fil-A kickoff – obviously, you had the TCU game as well, but just your senior year, and just what do you make of that, and just the way your career finished as a senior?
Yeah. Obviously, we kind of spun the Virginia Tech another made for TV game with Georgia. Awesome game. You're playing Georgia in Atlanta, Georgia Dome, whole deal. Prime time, all that stuff, and so. It was a really, really good game. I remember we started fairly slow. I think they finally got the lead. It was 7-0. We hadn't really done anything for a while. And then in the second quarter, for whatever reason, we just kind of got going. And, domino effect, and it went fast. And kind of were able to get the lead and stretch it out and get after them pretty good at that point. So really good game. Defense played awesome, like most games, and so it was really, really neat experience. And it was one of those transition years as well. Titus is gone, Austin's gone. Remember, we were going in the game, Matt Miller is a redshirt freshman starting for us, and Tyler Shoemaker's still there, Mitch Burrows, and Kirby got on the field a little bit here and there. And,
yeah,
we kind of got this receiver for committee that year, a bunch of guys that played a bunch of different. Roles and stuff, and so that's kind of the trend we took that year, and so there's a lot of people involved, and so it's kind of fun in that way.
I got to go back for a second because I skipped a question, but being a Heisman Trophy finalist, you look at your whole career, but getting a chance to go to New York and be a finalist for the Heisman Trophy, what was that whole experience like, and what did that mean to you?
It was awesome. It was great. Your family gets to come. You get to spend some time out there. Being a West Coaster, not being you're in New York City. It's Christmas. It's Christmas time. It's an awesome experience, and you're around some of the best of the best, from the former winners to the guys that year, which was Luck, LaMichael, and then obviously Cam. Cam won it. So
yeah.
So you're around some great people, and it was kind of a funny experience, because really the best thing that happened was there's a huge snowstorm across the Midwest and the West Coast that while we were out there, and so all the flights got canceled. So we went to the event, obviously, and then our flight got canceled. We got like 2 extra days in New York City, and so I remember Max Corbett, our SID at Boise.
Yeah.
My wife Julie and I, and Kirby, I think, was still there, and it was basically the four of us were just hanging out in New York City for an extra day, and so it turned out perfect. We ended up getting to see a whole lot more of the city than probably you expected, just because the schedule of the event. So it was a pretty cool deal.
Okay, so the 142 touchdown passes, second in NCAA still, the yards 14,667, fifth. you know, everyone knows the stats by now, but you finish your career, you don't get drafted, you sign with the Lions, obviously. How much, you know, I know you kind of played with a chip on your shoulder probably the whole time at Boise State, but how much just with everything you had done and then not getting, you know, much of a chance in the NFL, how much did that kind of fuel you going into your pro career?
Yeah. I mean, certainly, naturally, you use it. Yeah, you felt like you played pretty well in college, but obviously the size and all that stuff is going to hurt you in this process of, you know, the drafts and all that, the NFL. And so, yeah, you see some of the other guys that get drafted, and you're kind of like, man, you know, you'd think you could sneak in there at some point. You know, I think, you know, things happen for a reason, and I fell into a perfect situation in Detroit. We had two guys, Matthew, obviously the franchise guy, come off a playoff season. He threw for 5,000 yards, and our backup was a guy named Sean Hill, who had been around the league for, you know, Sean was probably on year 12 or 13 at that point, and came in the exact same way as me, undrafted. He really had that unique experience back in the day. He'd go to NFL Europe and do all those things, which would be awesome, you know, awesome for backup quarterbacks to have. And so he was fortunate to have that. So I feel like it was a really good situation. Obviously, Scott Linehan was the offense coordinator up there. So he kind of had a little bit of a Northwest, you know, connection, so to speak. And so, yeah, I felt really good about that situation. I was able to be there for 3 years. And so, you know, three seasons and learned a lot from those guys.
You 3 years there on the practice squad, obviously, but you never got that chance on the active roster. You go to the Cowboys, you get that chance. What was it like just going to the Cowboys and obviously Scott Linehan, again, the connection there, but, you know, he goes there and then you get a chance and you know, you finally get a chance to get in a game, which we'll talk about soon, but just going to the Cowboys and those 3 years, I guess, as the backup to both Tony and then Dak, what was kind of the you know, transition to the Cowboys like and you know, getting a chance to finally get in some games?
Yeah, I think it was a big moment for Julie and I think, you know, we'd just been in Detroit for 3 years, 3.5 years at that point. It was kind of one of those deals. You're on the 53, you're the third string quarterback, you're never active on game day. And, you know, they've reached the point, you know, these rosters in the NFL can be a little very dynamic. And, you know, not everyone keeps three quarterbacks on the active roster. And so they made the decision to go with two that year. And they're trying to have me come back on practice squad. And I just felt like, you know, sometimes you need a change. And as much as, you know, you have a comfort level in Detroit and everything inside of you screams, just stay here, we're good here. You know, we have our routine, we have our, you know, friends and all that stuff. It was just like, you know, you need something new and you need to, you know, branch out. And so Scott being in Dallas was obviously, you know, the key component of it. You know, felt like it was an opportunity to just, you know, a change of scenery and kind of see what happens. And so, you know, we ended up just going to practice squad in Dallas instead of Detroit, essentially. And, you know, lo and behold, 2 weeks later, Tony gets hurt at Philly and, you know, becomes a very dynamic quarterback room. We end up, you know, doing a lot of stuff that year with, you know, Whedon was playing. They traded for Castle. I was active a few of those games. You know, we were kind of doing this back and forth thing. Tony comes back, gets hurt again. And so towards the tail end of the year, you know, maybe by process of elimination, they threw me in there and let me play a little bit. And, you know, I felt very fortunate to have that.
And that first game against the Jets, a regular season game, I know you had played in preseason, but, you know, I was in San Diego covering the Poinsettia Bowl for Boise State, and we're at practice, and everyone I remember was knowing there was a chance you make it into the game. And you know, we went to me and Chad Kripe went to a restaurant that had the game on, and we're sitting there watching the game, and you get in, and then I remember getting back to the hotel, Boise State, after practice, and all their players and coaches are, like, running to the bar in the corner of the, you know, the hotel there, and you got, you know, 40 guys all watching and you know, that game and you know, just the you know, knowing that you're a Boise State guy. And just, I mean, what was it like just that final, that first game that you got in, and then just were you aware, I guess, of just how big of a deal it was to so many other people as well?
Yeah, obviously it was kind of crazy, to be honest. just because of the, you know, I came into Dallas during the season, basically. You know, by the time I got here, it's game week of week one. And so I basically spent the entire year on, you know, do a little bit of scout team, you know, on weeks that, you know, I was the quarterback, backup quarterback, and you never, you know, taking really any reps with the team, the offense. And so we kind of joked about it now, and, you know, looking back on it, but it was basically like I went out against the Jets, and I think that week I had finally called like four plays in the huddle when like Jason Witten and Travis Frederick were in the huddle. You know, it was like I got like one series on like a Friday. It was like here's four or five plays, and so you know, so much of it was just like trying to figure it out on the fly. And you know, fortunately, you know, you have Scott there, and so you had some, you know, connection to him at least. You know, there's a few times like, you know, hey, this play is really just this play from Detroit, you know. And so you're kind of trying to figure it out. You know, I laugh at that now, but I think first series I went in, the, you know, first play run, second play throw a little completion for like a yard or two, third play throw a pick, and I came off the field, and I just kind of told Scott, well, I said, it can't get any worse than this. So, you know, threw a pick already. And so you know, obviously it was kind of one of those, you know, figure it out, and we had a chance at the end. You know, you kind of just have to throw one up through another pick. And so, yeah, but after that, I got two extra games, you know, with the rest of the regular season. So got a chance to kind of go through the game week. You're the starter, you know, prepare and play those two. So, yeah, I feel like I grew a lot during that phase.
And obviously the final one against the Redskins, 435 yards passing, 33 completions, 3 touchdowns. I mean, you finished the year so strong. They believe in you to be the number two guy, and then going into the next season, and then obviously you get hurt. And everybody knows that that's, you know, kind of when Tony got hurt, and obviously when Dak kind of emerged. But what, maybe 10 years from now, maybe you'll think about it later, but have you kind of, you know, how tough was that injury, knowing that, you know, you may have gotten a chance to – you know, who knows what could have happened if you get a chance to be the starter at that point and your career maybe goes differently. Who knows? I mean, have you thought about that kind of stuff and what could happen if you didn't get hurt?
Yeah, I don't think too much. Obviously, you know, it was tough and frustrating at the time, just because you were kind of waiting for an opportunity like that. And so, yeah, obviously it was a tough deal, but sometimes things happen for a reason. You know, we figured out this number four is pretty darn good down here. So, we figured it out, and you know, it was a unique season, a unique situation, just because, you know, Tony being hurt, then I was hurt, I was out for the whole year. So, it's kind of my first little taste of this coaching world that I've now entered. And so, you know, kind of got it. Had a chance to kind of be on that side of the spectrum and help the room still and do a lot of things, you know, around the team while I was still rehabbing. So,
well, final couple things and we'll get you out of here, Kellen. We appreciate your time. But you mentioned the coaching. How did you, you know, what was kind of the discussion like? You know, whether you decided to try to play again or coach. How did that all kind of come about?
Yeah, I think it was just, I think you're playing odds. You know, could try and continue to play, but I think especially with this situation here, I felt like it was a really good opportunity. We love it here in Dallas. Our family loves it. You know, we're kind of settled here in a way, and so you know, have an opportunity to be here with the Cowboys. It's a situation that, you know, as far as a transition from playing to coaching, you can't ask for a better transition, just because, you know, you understand the scheme, you understand the philosophy, the expectations around here, and more importantly, you understand the people. And so, you know, it's one of those things that's, you know, I've been in that room the last few years. I feel like, you know, you have a really good relationship with Dak and Coop, who's our backup right now, and obviously Scott, so many of the other people. And so, you know, the transition, I feel like it felt like a good time to do it. And so, you know, we're really excited about it. And we'll see what happens.
Now, Ryan Dinwiddie is on a future podcast. I've already recorded with Ryan Dinwiddie, and it's going to be coming up in a couple weeks. But he told me that he tried to get you to come play for him in the CFL.
he did send me a few text messages, and it is a tough thing not to play. And it'll probably, you know, kill inside a little bit, you know, when guys start putting the pads on again and putting the helmets on, throwing the football around and all that, just because, you know, you would love to do it, But I think, you know, we just felt like this was a really good opportunity for our family, for us, and I'm really excited for it, you know, mainly because of the people I'll be working with. Dak's awesome. I believe in him, 100%. And so, you know, last year we went 9-7. Everyone thinks it was the worst season in Dallas history. And, you know, you're 9-7. And so, you know, it'll be exciting. I'm excited for it. I'm excited to kind of go through this process and, you know, learn and grow and, you know, fortunate for me around some really good coaches and players to learn from.
It's not going to be weird at all. I mean, you were just teammates with these guys. Now you're going to have to be criticizing them in film room and stuff like that. I mean, what's the dynamic going to be like?
I know. You know, I think I've been kind of dabbling on that coaching side for a little while, especially the IR year. I was able to kind of do some things behind the scenes, help Dak. You know, it was kind of a unique situation at that point just because, you know, Dak was playing. He was a rookie and just kind of gotten thrown in the fire. And then, you know, Mark Sanchez had just signed literally the week of the first game of the season. So those were our two quarterbacks. And so I was fortunate, you know, I feel like I was able to hopefully help those guys a little bit through that process as far as just understanding the offense and kind of different things throughout the week. And so, you know, from that point on, I think I've kind of carried some of that with me and, you know, tried to do it as well last year in some situations. And so, I think we have a really good relationship and, I think we trust each other. You know, I think it comes down to that, you know, trust that I'm going to help you in any way possible. I'm going to help push you a little bit if we need to. And, you know, more than anything, we're just going to, it'll be a collaboration. We'll work together, and we'll get this thing going.
So is head coach a goal someday? And, I mean, I know everybody talked about coaching, and everyone just assumed you would eventually coach. Is college coaching maybe your ultimate dream, or do you like the NFL? You think NFL is where you want to stay? And is head coaching in your dream, or just kind of QB coach coordinator? What do you kind of see for the future of this thing?
I think like anyone, you have aspirations to get to the top, and right now you're just kind of focused on your little bubble of quarterback coach for the Dallas Cowboys and see where that takes you. Obviously, NFL, college, you know, they're different. You know, they're different. The NFL is different than college. You know, in many ways, the games become a little bit different just because of the rules and the structure, and, you know, the field's a little different. There's some differences, but I feel like I haven't really pigeonholed myself into, you know, the NFL or college. I think sometimes people try to, and maybe I'm naive and, you know, I need to, but, you know, we'll see where this takes us. You know, I love this NFL thing so far. Certainly love college, had a great experience there. Love Boise, and we'll see where this takes us over the course of the next few years.
I mean, you're putting yourself in position now. It's not crazy. I mean, Kellen Moore, Boise State coach. I mean, it's not crazy now. You're coaching at this level. I mean, you know, if Coach Harsin ever leaves, you fans, you're the first name everybody wants.
Well, we love Boise, so you know, Harsin is doing an awesome job. You know, that place is special to us, and you know, we, no matter who's there, we just want that place to do well. So.
Well, hey, man, appreciate your time, giving me 35 minutes of your time. I really appreciate it, and we're looking forward to having you back in town for the Hall of Fame here in a couple weeks. That's going to be a lot of fun, and soak that in. And seriously, best of luck with the Cowboys and everything. And I know, obviously, Boise State fans listening to this are, you know, wishing you the best of luck as well.
I appreciate it.
Well, thanks to Kellen Moore for joining us, and what an interview there. You know, 35-plus minutes of his time, really appreciate that. And great stuff talking about, hey, you know, he's happy with what he's doing in the NFL, but he does love Boise, and I think he is opening himself up now. You know, it was before, as everybody knows, if there'd be an offensive coordinator leave or something, everybody would bring up Kellen Moore's name, but he didn't really have any coaching experience. It might be a little jump to go from none to being offensive coordinator or something at Boise State, but now he's going to have some coaching experience under his belt, so be very curious to see where his career path takes him, and if he does make it back at some point to Boise State. His brother, Kirby Moore, is the wide receivers coach for Fresno State. So that'll be interesting to follow and watch. we'll see what happened with Kellen Moore in the future. But really appreciate his time. And again, he's going into the Hall of Fame on April 13th, Friday, April 13th, the night before the spring game. At last check, they did have some tickets available for $100 through broncosports.com ticket office if you're interested in going to the Hall of Fame ceremony. He is one of seven people going into the Hall of Fame that day. They'll also be honored before the spring game on April 14th, which I believe is a 3:30 afternoon start for that. So really appreciate you for checking out the podcast. As I said before, please go to iTunes or Google Play and subscribe. You can also rate us and comment. We would really appreciate that. It helps us in the podcast rankings or whatever, so that would be big for us if you could please rate us and comment as well. But it'll be easy if you just subscribe, then that way you don't have to search for the episode each week. It'll automatically be downloaded to your smartphone or your tablet. You can listen at the gym. You can listen in your car. That's what I do. So blueturfsports.com, the podcast page, has the link to subscribe and also has the ways you can listen to the previous episodes with Brian Harsin and Chris Peterson. Next week on the podcast, Marty Tadman, pretty inspirational story. Former defensive back for Boise State, had the pick six in the first Fiesta Bowl in 2007, but almost didn't happen. He dealt with some drugs and some alcohol issues when he was growing up, and he almost stepped in front of a moving train and took his life away. And he just has a very inspirational story. And Marty Tadman is our guest on next week's Bronco Legends podcast. So hope you're enjoying this series. As always, you can reach out to me on Twitter at BJ Rains. That's BJRAINS. You can email me. It's the same address, bjrains@idahopress.com as well. If you have any suggestions for guests or thoughts or anything on the podcast or anything else that's going on, I would really appreciate hearing some feedback on this. And also, don't forget, we do have a couple sponsorship availability left. If you're an advertiser of a small business or any kind of business and want to jump on board here with this podcast, it's quickly growing. It's going to be a huge hit moving forward, and we love to have some local businesses come on board as sponsors. So you can reach out to my email there as well, and we'll get you taken care of. So thanks so much. Marty Tadman next week. Hope you enjoyed the three previous episodes. Have a great week, folks. This is BJ Rains at BlueTurfSports.com.